Welcome to The Parish, a community of ordinary people walking together in the way of Jesus. The messages are just one part of the Sunday morning experience, and we hope you join us for worship and the rhythm experience soon. We meet at 9:30 a.m. on Sunday mornings.
Well, good morning, everybody. I'm Ryan. For those of you who don't know, I'm one of the leaders here at The Parish. Glad that you're all here. We're on a series called Summer Mixtape, which really is a series about whatever we want to talk about, whoever wants to talk about whatever they want to talk about. And so we're on part seven of that. And what I'm going to talk about today is this concept of deconstruction. Now, I'm not going to talk about it in an academic way. There's a whole academic ideology around deconstruction from Derrida and all that kind of stuff. I'm sorry, Grant, I'm not doing that. I'm not smart enough to do that. So this is going to be more of an informal discussion about deconstruction as it pertains to evangelicalism, as it pertains to, in particular, white guys like me. And so when I was doing some studying and thinking about it, I'm a very visual person. I love to have music playing while I'm researching, studying, all that kind of stuff. Not classical music like Grantham shared with us last week. But I also look for imagery that sort of speaks to me about the thing that we are talking about. And so as I was doing, I came across this art from an African artist named Werner Smith. Go ahead and put that up there. And this is from his series called Construct Deconstruct. And this was a really moving piece to me when I was thinking about this concept. So I wanted you to see this as I sort of give you the definition of deconstruction that we're going to work from today. And that definition is this: deconstruction, to openly investigate the nuances of one's belief and to eliminate those beliefs that hinder a more Christ-like way. Okay? So when I was looking at this picture, I'm looking at this person who's obviously older in age. He's probably seen a lot of things in life. And there's sort of something happening with the facial expression in his eyes, the way that his hand is across his mouth, as if he's hearing something for the first time, like he'd believed something before, and now he's hearing it's not as you had thought it was. There's a new way to approach this. Perhaps even some angst or some remorse about how maybe he has believed before, the things that he's participated in based upon those beliefs. And so I found it to be a very, very moving image, and I wanted to share that with you first as we think about this idea of deconstruction. Again, to openly investigate the nuances of one's belief and to eliminate those beliefs that hinder a more Christ-like way. Brian Zond, in his book, When Everything's on Fire, said this: faith founded on fundamentalist certitude is increasingly untenable. This is why we need deconstruction, because what we're finding right now, especially in evangelical spaces, is that we have oftentimes faith that has been established on fundamentalist certitudes. And it's becoming more and more untenable. It's becoming more and more difficult to live in those spaces. Now, recently, this word deconstruction has been going around. This is why I've been thinking about it and why I wanted to share about it today. It's been going around on the internet, interwebs. And in particular, the Theo Bros. These are the guys, the guardians of fundamentalism. We call them Theo Bros. The Theo Bros have been out, you know, just on the front lines, just really railing against deconstruction, really upset about the word deconstruction. They get really upset about words like whimsical. It's interesting to watch what gets them upset. But deconstruction was one of them. And as I was reading and thinking through what all these pieces that people are writing about it, for and against, all that kind of stuff, I'm like, it seems fairly simple to me. And so then I sent out my own tweet. I don't think anybody would consider me a Theo bro, but my tweet was this: the invitation to deconstruct, you can put that up there. You have heard it said, but I say to you. This is a statement Jesus made. You have heard it said, but I say to you. Not only is this something that Jesus said, but this is something Jesus said pretty often. And so I want to just break down this statement. I've been thinking about this statement that Jesus made over and over again over the last few months, and I just want to take a few minutes to walk through it. First, let's start with this "you've heard it said" piece. This was said in the Sermon on the Mount. The Sermon on the Mount is the greatest amount of teaching that we have from Jesus recorded in the Bible. Okay, it's in Matthew, starts in chapter 5, I think ends at the end of chapter 7. Right sort of in the beginning, after the Beatitudes, Jesus starts to talk about sort of the way things have been. And people would say that this Sermon on the Mount is like the constitution of the kingdom, if you will, or the manifesto of this Messiah. Like, this is how the kingdom works now, right? Or how it should be working. And so it's right in the middle of this. And six times he makes this declaration, one right after another. You've heard it said, blah, 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 blah. But I say to you, blah, 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 blah. Six times. And every single time that he says it, he actually is referencing interrelational engagements. He's talking about how we interact with one another. So it's like, you've heard it said, it's about murder, it's about adultery, it's about divorce, it's about oaths, it's about retaliation, it's about love. These are the things that he's referencing this over. You've heard it said, but I say to you. And I just started thinking about how radical did that sound to those who have been around and have been hearing a thing taught over and over again one way. And now all of a sudden, this guy, this carpenter, this nobody, in a lot of their opinion, shows up and says, no. I know you've heard it said, but I'm telling you, it's different. And so I've been thinking about these relational interactions, and that picture is still sort of, you know, I think of that picture that I showed, that art of that man sitting in the audience with Jesus, like, you've heard it said, but I'm telling you, he's like, this is maybe life-changing to think that I can eliminate some of these old ways of thinking and adopt new ways of thinking and living. And I thought about, you know, when he says, you heard it said, that there's sort of some implications here about what's going on. So he's telling them, like, you have had a way of believing. You've had an established way of believing this is how the world exists. This is how we should interact with one another. But I'm telling you something different. He's sort of telling them there's a truth that you have been told. But what if you don't know the whole truth? But what if that truth isn't the truth at all? He's sort of telling them there's this cultural lens that you are viewing things through, this worldview that you have that's been shaped by what you've been taught, the indoctrinations of your life, whomever has taught you this, you have this lens that you've been viewing things through, and perhaps maybe we should reconsider that lens. There's a really popular podcast that came out not too long ago called The Rise and Fall of Mars Hill, which was a big church up in Washington. Mark Driscoll is the pastor. It's a big mess. You can listen to the podcast. At the end of the podcast, they were talking to Paul David Tripp, who's a pastor and was involved in the deal, and he said something very profound that I thought, by the way, Paul David Tripp is a Theo bro. He doesn't get on Twitter and argue, but he's with them. He's in their corner, and he gets on this podcast, and he makes this statement which shook a lot of people in that world. Here's what he said. We should all be deconstructing our faith. We better do it, he said, because our faith becomes a culture, this cultural lens in which we view. Our faith becomes a culture so webbed into the purity of truth that it's hard to separate the two. And we better do some deconstructing, or we're going to find ourselves again and again in these sad places. So Jesus said, you've heard it said, like you've got this cultural lens that you've interwoven as if that lens is the truth. And that brings us to these sad, sad places. You have an understanding. You have a way in which you were taught. But what if that way isn't the way? Now, I'm not going to give you the way this morning. I don't even really want to talk about the six things that Jesus talked about in regards to divorce and adultery and all that. We can go read all the commentaries, whatever you want to do there. I just think that this whole premise of being able to say, hey, look, you've heard it said, but I say to you, this whole idea of you have the opportunity or the invitation even from Jesus himself to rethink the things that you've believed, the things that you've been taught, and view them from a different perspective is pretty powerful. Now, when I was thinking about this and studying on it, I was reminded of a book that I read a long time ago, and it's an interesting book. It's called What Do They Hear? By a man named Mark Allen Powell. And it's about closing the gap between people like me who speak and people who hear. The worst book cover you've ever seen, like, it's horribly designed. I would have never picked it up by looking at the cover. It's trash in that sense. But there's something interesting in the book that has always stuck with me, and that is this thing that this pastor did with a number of people, this sort of unscientific experiment, if you will. And it was this. He had the students in his class. He started with a bunch of American students, and he also had a bunch of Russian students from St. Petersburg in two different accounts. But on both accounts, he had them retell the story of the prodigal son. Just retell from memory, not to read it, to retell it, story of the prodigal son. And I'm going to read that story to you. I want you to hear it. I'm not going to put it up here. I want you to read it. I want you to hear the story. And there's some interesting things that happen that I want to talk about. And it's about cultural lens, how we view what we're hearing and how we create the belief systems that we have. Real quick, the prodigal son story in Luke chapter 15 says this. Then Jesus said, a man had two sons. The younger of them said to his father, Father, give me the share of the estate that would belong to me. So he divided his assets between them. After a few days, the younger son gathered together all he had and left on a journey to a distant country, and there he squandered his wealth with a wild lifestyle. Then after he had spent everything, a severe famine took place in that country, and he began to be in need. So he went and worked for one of the citizens of that country who sent him to his fields to feed pigs. He was longing to eat the carob pods the pigs were eating, but no one gave him anything. But when he came to his senses, he said, how many of my father's hired workers have food enough to spare? But here I am dying from hunger. I will get up and go to my father and say to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Treat me like one of your hired workers. And the rest of the story goes, his father receives them, all that kind of stuff. Throws a big party. Welcome back. Question, and that you can answer, like raise your hand or shout it out. What is it that caused the son to be in the pigsty longing for the food? What did he do? What created that scenario for the son? Anybody got an answer? Somebody. Squandered all of his wealth. Good one. Who believes that? Like, hey, dude, squandered everything. Dad gave him early inheritance, squandered it. Anybody on that page, squandered it. Any other ideas? Quick. Self-determination. Okay, great. I've never heard that one, but I like it. Yeah, so pull myself up, I'm going to do what I want to do. Yeah, I like it. Any other thoughts? Pride. Good. Hunger. That's why he ended up, that's what caused him to end up with the pig, or wanting the pigsty, to eat the pigsty. He's hungry. He's desperate. Good. So when he did this experiment with the students and told them to retell the story, here's what happened that's interesting, and it happened right here just as we talked. Among the American students, this was in Columbus, Ohio, as they retold from memory the story of the parable, 100% of them referenced that he squandered the money. 100% of the American students, he squandered his cash. That's why he ended up where he ended up. Only 6% of them, 0% in here, only 6% of them mentioned that a famine came into the land. Now, American ideology is what? Pull yourself up by your bootstraps. Get it together. Self-made person. Have some determination. Have some pride. Let's go. We can't give people paychecks every month from the government because then they won't work. You know what I'm saying? We have this ideology in America. This is how we do it. Now, in St. Petersburg, Russia, when they retold this story, 34% of them mentioned the squandering of the resources. But 84% of them mentioned the famine. Like, how did he end up in this situation? Well, the famine. The famine is a problem. Now, to understand why they would do that, you have to understand a little bit about their history. In 1941, that particular town was invaded by Germany. That forced them into a 900-day famine. 670,000 people died from that famine. So famine is pretty critical in their eyes. When they hear that, it evokes a certain emotion because of the cultural implications that they deal with. So they have a belief system, whether it be America or St. Petersburg, that has been developed based upon the cultural lens. You've heard it said. You've been taught. This is what happens. This is what's important. Are you following me? I hope this is making sense. What was interesting is then he went to Africa, to Tanzania. And he asked him the same question I just asked you, which is, why does the son end up starving in the pig pen? Like, why does, what caused that result? 80% of them said something that nobody else said, and nobody here said. 80% of them said because no one gave him anything to eat. And it's actually in the, I read it, it said it in the text. And the reason why they think that is because, well, the Bible commands to care for the stranger and the alien who's in our midst. How is he supposed to know that there's potential of famine if he's a foreigner? How is he supposed to know how to use his resources, because foreigners get swindled out of their resources all the time? It's not fair to hold him accountable for something he did not know. So why didn't anybody give him something to eat? It's all about perspective. It's all about the cultural lenses that we come from. So sometimes we think a thing is a certain way and that it should be this way and this is the truth and this is how it is. And somebody comes along and says, no, I've heard, I know that you've heard it said that way before, or you've been taught that way, but what if there's a better way or another way? Sometimes in life, we learn, but then as we grow, we find that we may need to unlearn and learn again. And that's what I think about this concept of deconstruction. You've heard it said, but I said to you. Sometimes we learn things. Hopefully, everybody has learned some things. But then as you grow, as you mature, as you get older, as you have more experience, you engage with more people around you, you begin to recognize that, wait, maybe I need to unlearn some things and learn again. And I think that's what Jesus says, like, you've heard it said, but I say to you. This was Jesus inviting us into a learn again posture. I understand all of your rabbis, all of your teachers have taught you a certain way to think, but I'm inviting you to rethink what you've thought. But I say to you, perhaps there is a more Christ-like way to understand, view, and interact with our culture. A more Christ-like way to have these interactions, these relational interactions. I find it fascinating that when Jesus uses this phrase, you've heard it say, but I said to you, that he uses it every single time about a relational interaction. It's not about some big theological idea. It's about real life, like boots on the ground, dirt on your face, blood on your lips, like real life moments. And I think what it offers us is an opportunity to learn again. But in order to do that, we have to have a willingness to be wrong. That's hard. We have to have a willingness to repent or change our minds. We have to have a willingness to be teachable, to hear that other perspective, to be open to what other people say. And in some ways, which I'm getting ready to share my song, and I'm going to actually sing my song for you this morning. In some ways, we have to have a willingness to break up these man-made religion ideas. So the song I'm going to sing is from Wilder Woods called Religion. And it really is a breakup song with religion. We're going to put the words on the screen so that you can hear and see what it's, but it's this whole metaphor of this particular Bo, I think is his name. Bo and Bear are the two brothers from Need to Breathe. One of them made his own album, Wilder Woods. And they were Christian kids. They were raised up in fundamentalist churches. And it's his sort of breakup song, literally, with the way that he was taught about church and religion and all these kind of things. So I'm going to share that. I'm going to come back and ask a couple questions and I'll close.
I was on my knees again, begging for my ways to change. But the truth I uncovered, the pressure I'm under to please you has gone away. You're a temptress, you're to blame for the guilt I can't displace. Though there's winters and summers and so much has changed, you're the fortress for my shame. I was born in the shadows of preachers and saints. I was raised in the house of God. But the blood on my lips, the dirt on my face is all the religion I've got. It's all the religion I've got. It's all the religion I've got. I was lost inside her arms, trying to climb my way back out. But it ain't what you got or the buildings you bought that'll save you from the sound. She's a needy harlequin built by greed and selfish men. Though it's easy to love her, for all you discover, she's bound to fall again. I was born in the shadows of preachers and saints. I was raised in the house of God. But the blood on my lips, the dirt on my face is all the religion I've got. It's all the religion I've got. Whoa.
Different, I know. But the reality is the relationships that we have. It's not about the dogma, the man-made religion. It's about the relationships. I love the line, the blood on my lips and the dirt on my face. It's a real life that I'm living with the people that I'm with. This is what I got. A couple questions to consider, and then I'll pray. One, what are some beliefs you've held on to that could use challenging? It's a big question. But think about it in regards to how you interact with people. What are some beliefs that you've held on to that could really use some challenging? How do you view others? Define whatever that other is. How do you define or view those folks? I guess it's not on there, but you could ask yourself, who have I othered? And why have I othered them? Secondly, in what ways have you allowed a limited cultural lens to define your own absolutes? Jesus said, you've heard it said, but I say to you, and it's an invitation to deconstruct all of those poor beliefs and find a better, more Christ-like way. Let me pray this prayer over you. The Lord bless you. The Lord keep you. The Lord make his face to shine upon you and be gracious to you. The Lord turn his face towards you and give you peace. God bless you.
We appreciate you listening online to our talks from previous weeks. For more information about our church or to see where we are currently meeting, please visit our website at www.theparish.us.